Good afternoon. The time is 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News. This is a Juno afternoon for Tuesday, October 29th. My name is Martha Moore. On today's program, we'll talk with Ken Fix about this week's planetarium presentation. We'll talk with Marianne Manning about our first Friday show at the Canvas. Plus, we'll highlight November art classes with Chris Taylor. Deidre Darr will offer details about activities celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Shrine of St. Therese. And Hillary Young from Juno Youth Services in the Juno School District will be here with students to talk about the Sources of Strength program. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. The forecast today is calling for periods of rain. Tonight, rain, highs around 49.
This is National Native News. I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. This week marks 10 years since a proposal for a copper and zinc mine in northern Wisconsin came to an end. As WXPR's Natalie Jablonski reports, members of the Mole Lake, Sakagan, Chippewa, and Menominee tribes gathered this weekend to celebrate, but pointed out that mining remains a controversial issue in northern Wisconsin.
First Exxon and later BHP Billiton proposed to open a copper and zinc mine near Crandon, Wisconsin, but the mine site was close to the headwaters of the pristine Wolf River. The Menominee Reservation was 40 miles downstream, and the Mole Lake Reservation was even closer. The tribes worried water pollution could ruin their sacred beds of wild rice. In 2002, the Mole Lake Sakagan tribe won the right as a sovereign nation to set its own standards for air and water quality. Mole Lake Sakagan tribal chairman Chris McGeeshick says that meant it could set strict limits on pollutants.
Enacting our own water quality standards, I feel that was the turning point where the tribe, our rights were recognized as a government to have the ability to adopt and enforce our own water quality standards and regulations within this watershed.
The following year, the nearly three-decade fight ended. October 28th marks 10 years since Mole Lake Sakagan and Forest County Potawatomi purchased the mine site for more than $16 million. Some see parallels between the Crandon mine story and Gogebic Taconite's plan for a Pinoki mine, like activist Frances Van Zyl. She was involved in the fight against the Crandon mine since the 1970s.
People today have to remember that the state of Wisconsin is planning on opening another mine, and what we should all of us, each and every one of us, should be worried about is clean water.
About 100 people attended Saturday's celebration at Mole Lake. For National Native News, I'm Natalie Jablonski.
People attending the annual Alaska Federation of Natives Convention rallied in Fairbanks over the weekend in support of four Native men they believe are wrongly imprisoned for murder. George Fries, Eugene Vent, Marvin Roberts, and Kevin Pease are serving long sentences for the 1997 beating of Fairbanks teen John Hartman. The so-called Fairbanks 4 case jumped to center stage last month when the Alaska Innocence Project filed requests for post-conviction relief based on new information showing others are responsible for the crime. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the call for their exoneration took on a broader voice at the rally.
Dozens waved signs, banged drums, and sang in solidarity with the Fairbanks Four. Native American rock star Robbie Romero of New Mexico joined Alaska Natives in support of the jailed men.
I'm honored to be here with you today, and I'm honored to stand up and speak out for these four men who have been falsely incarcerated. Oh.
Romero encouraged a peaceful approach, a sentiment echoed by Athabascan David Solomon, who warned ralliers not to let anger about what's happened dictate their actions.
We have to do it in a good way. Don't let the white man track you, make you go off the wrong track to be off the Native in jail. We do it in a loving way, in a good way.
Alaska Federation of Natives Convention delegates unanimously passed a resolution in support of the Fairbanks Four. For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
The Forest County Potawatomi tribe has opened a plant in Milwaukee that converts food waste into energy. According to officials, the plant will create green energy by putting microorganisms to work to convert waste into methane gas, and anything the microorganisms don't get will likely become fertilizer. The Forest County Potawatomi will bring in about 20 trucks a day with food waste, and they say the energy produced will be sold. The tribe expects to fuel about 1,500 homes as well as their nearby casino.
We'll be right back.
On this day in 1918, the town of Juneau was quarantined to help prevent the spread of Spanish influenza. The flu killed millions of people around the world. In Alaska, many Native people were hit by the epidemic, and in some cases, entire villages were killed. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you are listening to KTOO News, and this is a Juno afternoon. My first guest this afternoon is Ken Fix, and he is here to talk about the Planetarium Show tonight, and that's at 6:30. Tell us again where they are.
This is the Hermes and Mercury Show, and I'll be putting that on at the Marie Drake Planetarium, which is on Glacier Avenue, just before you get to downtown. If you're coming from the valley, just take Egan until you see the breakwater. Make the first left, make the first right, go past the fences. As soon as the fences stop, you'll see a sidewalk, and a little dome structure is kind of on the top of the building, and that's where the planetarium is. If you pass the Blockbuster video, you went too far.
Okay, so the Hermes and Mercury Show, what is that?
I'm returning to the mythology and planetary science shows that I started doing when I first became a volunteer at the planetarium. The very first show I did was in December of 2010, and it was Hermes and Mercury. But at that time, the Messenger space probe that NASA had sent to Mercury hadn't arrived in orbit yet. It had done a couple of flybys, you know, on its way to getting positioned for the orbit, but hadn't actually got into orbit yet. But now that it has, we have over 2 years of planetary science to cover, thousands of pictures. I won't be showing all of them, but I'll just be concentrating on a few neat things that it's found out and telling a little bit about the other discoveries that Messenger has confirmed since it arrived on station.
So the Messenger probe, when was that launched? It must have taken a few years to get there.
Yes, launched in 2008. A Delta IV rocket carried it into orbit. It didn't go up on the space shuttle. And it had to do several flybys of other planets. It did a flyby of Earth. It did two flybys of Venus. And at each of these encounters, it was able to use its onboard equipment to take pictures and, you know, run the full array of what it's capable of doing until it got to Mercury. It did three flybys of Mercury before it finally went into orbit around Mercury. If you have unlimited gas, you can just fly right to where you want to go and then slow down and stuff. But
that's the limiting factor.
These things carry a very limited amount of propellant. And so that's why we have rocket scientists, is to figure out all the trajectories and how gravity interacts with it and speeds the spacecraft up or slows it down in order to get it in the proper position to go into orbit around Mercury, which had never been done before. We'd flown by it, but we actually hadn't put a probe in orbit around the planet.
So what sort of things is the probe studying about Mercury?
First off, it's taken a complete pictorial survey of the surface of the planet. When Mariner 10 went by it in 1974, we got about 45% of the planet in pictures. And, of course, they weren't very good ones back then either. But now that Messenger has been in orbit, we've got the entire planet imaged, you know, including the poles. So every bit of it has been photographed. We've also run magnetic studies on Mercury's magnetic field in order to figure out that it does have a north and south pole, and it works very much like our magnetic field does. So it's the only terrestrial planet other than Earth, you know, like the four inner planets, that has a stable magnetic field. So Mercury is very much like Earth in that respect. So it has a molten iron core, just like the Earth does, and it generates a magnetic field, which keeps the solar wind from impacting it directly in most cases. And it also has an axis tilt that's near nothing. It's 3/10 of a degree. So unlike the Earth, which turns, you know, we've got like about a 23-degree tilt to our axis, which is what generates our seasons, Mercury has none of that. It's straight up and down. And as it goes around the sun, its equator always stays hot and its poles always stay cold. So it's got the most extreme temperature ranges of any planet in the solar system.
Hmm. Were there any surprising discoveries?
Yeah, we confirmed that there's ice at the poles.
Oh.
So you wouldn't think that there would be, but there is. It just happens to be enough in the shade all the time that it never gets the sun, and therefore that water ice that came in on comets or however it was delivered has never melted. So there is ice at the poles at Mercury, which is pretty fascinating.
So all of this had to be discovered from the orbiting probe. It didn't land or anything, right?
Correct. It's still in orbit. It does not land. It has sent no landers down. But Mercury wasn't able to be studied by Hubble or any other space telescopes because it's too close to the sun. So it's literally the kind of thing where they can't point it at the sun because then all sorts of other things happen since it's an optical telescope. Whereas if we look at it with an X-ray telescope or something like that, you can look directly at the sun, but not in the case with Hubble. So it's never been able to be used to study Mercury.
And this probe can get close to the sun, obviously.
Oh, yeah. It's got a really nice ceramic heat shield that's on the outside of it. MESSENGER isn't very big. I'll show you pictures tonight for the people that attend the show. But it's about the size of a big SUV or like a Humvee with two solar panels on each side. But that ceramic heat shield stays oriented towards the sun all the time so that the planetary instruments that are on the other side that have been shielded don't get fried.
So what's the show going to be consist of tonight?
Okay, well, I start off with a discussion of the mythology behind Hermes, who was, most people know him just as the messenger, but he did a lot more than that. He was not only a messenger for the gods and ran things back and forth between Mount Olympus and the human realm, but he was the god of all boundaries and transactions. He's also the patron guide of liars, tricksters, and thieves.
Wow.
And he's the one that ferried your soul from the land of the living to the land of the dead.
So then who will ferry my soul?
Yeah, well, that's what the ancient Greeks and Romans believed. He was called Mercury in Roman mythologies, Hermes in Greek mythology.
Okay, great. And you'll be talking about the gods, and then what else will...
Yes, then I'll go into planetary science, the history of our exploration of the planet Mercury, what MESSENGER has been doing lately, show some pictures of the volcanic activity on the surface, plus we've got a really nice impact basin. It's actually the largest impact site that we can see in our solar system. It's called the Caloris Impact Basin. It's where an object about, I'd say about 20 miles or so in diameter impacted Mercury, and that impact not only started a lava flow, but it pushed out from the other side. In other words, like kind of like how sound waves or waves travel through water. Well, it traveled through the planet and pushed out a corresponding spot on the other side.
Oh,
and people that have studied that have related that to what happened here on our planet, because the impact that sort of wiped out the dinosaurs that everybody believes happened at Chicxulub, which is in Mexico, it pushed out a corresponding spot on the other part of our planet in India. So it's called the Deccan Scarps. So it pushed that area out. And, we figured this out by looking at everything. Of course, now we got Google Maps and stuff like that. So you can figure out where this opposite point is on the Earth and see that this terrain got pushed up suddenly and there was some volcanic activity associated with it. And it's because that wave traveled through our planet and pushed a corresponding spot out on the other side.
How did you get to know so much about this?
I do a lot of research, stay up late, that kind of thing. No, planets are our business there at the planetarium. So planetary science is something that I enjoy studying. I enjoy relating it to the mythology that named those planets. So it's just fun, and that's what the planetarium's all about, is about educating people as to what's going on out there. I'll also recap a little bit of what's going on with some other space probes that we have out there, because they really don't get a whole lot of publicity, but we've actually got a few recent photos from Mars that were taken by the Curiosity rover. We've got a really cool picture of Titan that just came in about a week and a half ago from the Cassini space probe, and I'll be talking about the Juno probe, which is on its way to Jupiter and should be there in another year or so, and a little bit of an update of what's going on out towards Pluto, because we have another one that's on its way out there that won't get there until July of 2015, but just a little update on what's going on, because we're still hitchhiking rides with the Russians to get into space, but there's a lot of robotic science that's going on that's generating quite a bit of really cool discoveries and some genuinely fascinating pictures that I'll show.
Yeah, well, that's great. And so that's tonight at 6:30 at the Planetarium. And I've been speaking with Ken Fix. And this show lasts about an hour. Is that true?
Yes.
And the pictures that get shown up on the...
it's projected on the Planetarium Dome. It's a PowerPoint projector, but you know, in the summertime, we use it to run movies. So that's. But now that we're back to our regular science shows, it does what it's supposed to do, and you know, that's presenting mythology and planetary science is what I like to do.
So this is October's show, and will there be a show every month?
Yes, there is. We do a free show for the public every single month. Of course, you know, anybody that comes by tonight, there is no charge. Just come on in. It's great. You know, it's free. Mm-hmm. It's something to do, especially if it comes out raining, like the forecast says it's supposed to.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for coming in, Ken. And, yeah, sounds like fun.
Thank you very much for having me, Martha.
That was Zodiacal Zydeco, Beth Nielsen Chapman. And you are listening to K2 News, and my next couple of guests are in the studio. They are Marianne Manning and Chris Taylor. And Marianne Manning has a show this Friday. This Friday is First Friday coming up. November 1st, and it's an art show at the Canvas. Welcome, Mary Ann.
Thank you.
And I also have Chris Taylor with me. He's from the Canvas to tell about November art classes.
That's correct.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. So let me start with you, Mary Ann. Tell us about your first Friday show. First, tell me when it is. I know it's Friday, but when does it start, and what can we expect to see there?
Well, it's this Friday from 4:30 until 7 at the Canvas, and the show will be paintings I've done, some glasswork I've done, some mosaic I've done. So I do oil paintings, and there'll be portraits and landscapes. I've done some stained glass that I wanted to show different people, and then some mosaic. And I actually teach a class at the Canvas on glass, on glass mosaic. And so I'm looking forward to that. I'm doing some baking, so if people want to come, they can have a cookie and look around, and I would like to show my
work. Okay. Great. So have you been doing artwork all your life?
Yes, I really have. I always loved art as a child, and then I had children, and we all kind of did art together. I taught art at the high school for a number of years, and I retired a few years ago, and so I've been fortunate to have been able to take some classes and kind of pursue my own art. I love all kinds of art. I like doing all kinds of things, but it's been nice to just focus. I have time. I have space. Children are out of the house, so it's been great for me the last few years, and this community has been very supportive.
So I know you've are kind of known for your portraits in oils, and are these other mediums, are they new for you, or you've...
No, I taught stained glass. Teaching art at a high school, you do a little bit of a lot of things, and so I really enjoy doing all different kinds of art. I found, though, with, for example, with glass projects, you can maybe watch television or kind of keep an eye on a grandchild. When you are doing an oil portrait, that's not possible. So I've learned to do different things at different times. So what works into my life and my family.
And the artwork that you'll be showing on Friday, now, will that be for sale?
Yes, some is already purchased work that people are allowing me to show. Some people have ordered portraits for the Christmas holiday, and so they're allowing me to put it up and show that. All the landscapes and most of the mosaics and stuff are all for sale. Portraits are a funny thing to have a show, because you're really showing that you can do portraits, but
they're commissioned,
you know,
who wants
a portrait of someone else's grandchild?
Right.
There are people who I've had people say, no, that's not true. I would have bought that portrait. So, but personally, I think it's more of a personal portrait is something that you want of, you know, your family or something to have for a long
time.
When
I think of portraits of all the kinds of different artwork you can do, it seems to me that that's might be the most pressure, because you can actually, get it wrong, or somebody,
Yeah, you can get it wrong, but I am fortunate that I live in a home. My husband's an artist. My daughter's an artist. Chris Taylor here is a fabulous artist, and they help me a lot. When I, you're looking at something, you know something's not right. The trick in a portrait, I think, is to get maybe just the personality. You want a little gleam, a little something that says, oh, yeah, that's her. Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that look. And if you can get that, then you've nailed it. So that's what I like to look for.
Quite a challenge. So, Chris, tell us about the November art classes coming up at the Canvas.
Great. Yeah, we have quite a list going currently, and so I thought I'd just talk about it. A lot of them have already filled, but I'd talk about the few that are still have some spaces available. One in particular, one of Mary Ann's many artistic daughters is teaching a class called Alla Prima, painting in oil, and basically that's a class that's starting November 12th, and it's a class that'll be focusing on painting wet into wet painting, so as opposed to doing a layering approach, it'll be very immediate. And then we have another class being taught by David Woody that's starting on November 20th. And that's a pretty interesting class. It's a double drawing is what we call it. And the class is going to have two models as opposed to one. Typically our figurative drawing classes just have one model. This will have two models posing, so there'll be an interesting dynamic between the two. Narrative comes into play. And then also composition becomes a very interesting factor in the drawing, so that should be a pretty dynamic class. Another class that we have coming up is a color theory class by one of our artists here in town, Inari Kalanen, and she'll be teaching, I think from what I gather, a pretty interesting approach to color theory. People should definitely jump on our website and read the description for the class to kind of get a feel for how she'll be teaching it. It's a little bit different from how I've heard other color theory classes be run, so that should be an interesting one. And then Inari is also going to be teaching a monotype printing class starting on November 14th. That should be a great class right now. She is one of our teachers that's working with our Reach artists, and she's actually working with them on this similar process, and it's a really beautiful process. It's a perfect combination between drawing and printmaking, and it gets a very unique look. So anyone that's interested in delving in into that and has interest in either printmaking or drawing, this would be a great class to take your skills further or just learn how to do it. And then last but not least on our list of classes with some spots open still is a Tlingit wall hanging class taught by Ricky Tagaban, and that's starting on November 19th. I think that'd be a great class. Ricky's a very talented weaver here in town, and you can check out his work. He just recently received a Rasmussen grant, and they have pictures of his work on their website, which is linked to our website, the Canvas's website. So.
Sounds like we have a lot of talented artists in town who are willing to pass on their expertise.
Yes, more than we can count, and we're very thankful that they're participating in the Juneau art scene and spreading their knowledge.
And who can sign up for these classes? Do you need to have any experience?
Nope, they are. We encourage everybody at the Canvas. It's arts for everybody, regardless of your skills, your age. We would prefer anyone and everyone, and we have people that take classes with a ton of experience. Marianne's taken classes down there and has enjoyed them, and she's a very talented artist. And then we have people who have never touched a pencil or a paintbrush before and have seen some great changes and really enjoyed it as well.
So there's a limited number of spots, so people need to sign up. How do they do that?
So they can either jump on our website and they can send us an email. It's easy to send an email directly through our website and let us know what class you're interested in. We'll respond to you via email and also through a phone call that way. Or you can just give us a call at the Canvas as well. But we have all of our classes listed on there with the price and the times and the dates and a description and an image of the artist's work that we'll be teaching you.
Great. So my guests are Marianne Manning and Chris Taylor. And coming up this Friday at the Canvas for First Friday, Marianne has a art show there. And I wish you a lot of luck with that event. And thank you for coming in, both of you.
Thank you very much.
Grandma Moses.
Grandma Moses loved embroidery, sewed into her 17 arthritis, made her hands too hurt, picked up her brush and got to work. Grandma Moses saw her paintings on a wall, Mr. Calder bought the wall, showed them at the modern art. That's how Grandma got her start. Grandma Moses, she was 76 when she started to paint. Old timey pictures survived her so quaint, depicting the life that she lived as a child. The modern ones saw them, they see the smile.
and you are tuned to KTOO News. My next guest is Deidre Darr, and Deidre works for the Catholic Diocese, is that right?
That's right.
And she's here to talk about the 75th anniversary celebration at the Shrine, and welcome, Deidre.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. And so why don't you go ahead and just tell us about this event out at the Shrine.
The event's this Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Shrine Chapel. We're having a kickoff celebration for our 75th anniversary year. Tomorrow is actually the 75th anniversary of the cornerstone of the chapel being laid. So we picked the Saturday closest, and we're going to have a concert series, and Saturday is the first concert that we're going to have out there.
Great. And so what year was it born? Was it born? Was it made? Built?
It was a several-year process, but the cornerstone was laid in 1938 on October 30th.
Okay. And what is your job with the diocese?
I'm the executive director of the Shrine of St. Therese.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you're fairly new at this job.
I am. We haven't even been here 4 months yet. I think tomorrow will be our four-month anniversary in Juneau. And I started the job July 1st, so I'm pretty new to the job as well.
And you came from where?
We were in northern Mississippi for 3 years, but I'm originally from Chicago.
And did you have any idea how beautiful the Shrine was before you got here?
No, actually, I was hired without seeing the place, but Bishop Burns was insistent that I come up to Juneau to make sure that I like it. And I arrived here in June, that weekend of the incredible weather, so there was no way to not like Juneau. It's so beautiful and so incredible here.
And this event, which is on
Saturday,
okay, and it is what time again?
3 p.m.
Okay, and it's a fundraiser?
It is a fundraiser to help benefit the Shrine. That the whole concert series we're going to do will be all benefit fundraisers.
Are there still church services in the chapel?
There are actually. Saturday morning we're going to have one as part of the church year, the Catholic Church year. That's All Souls, where we particularly remember those who have died in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
But normally masses are only Sundays from during the summer, following the Sunday after Memorial Day through to Labor Day weekend.
And what will the money go to that you raise?
The money will go to some projects that we have coming up. Really a very important project, but not very flashy. We have to upgrade our septic system. So it has to be done. So the money will be going towards that project.
So tell me about the show itself. You have some musical performers?
We do. We have three acts. We'll open with Miss Ains Behaven, who they normally do Andrew Sisters pieces, from what I understand, but they're going to be singing three sacred pieces, and I got to hear them practice in the chapel yesterday morning, and it was absolutely beautiful.
And who is doing this?
Miss Ains Behaven.
Oh, that's a person.
That's the name of their group. So it's three ladies, Pat Bielek, Rebecca Albert, and Scarlett Adam are a part of Miss Ains Behaven. And then we also have the Alaska Youth Choir will be singing, and I believe they're singing six pieces. And then we have Mary Smet and Greg Berger from Full Circle will be rounding out the program for us, all sacred pieces.
Great. Sounds like great music.
Yeah.
Always enjoyed the Alaska Youth Choir. Will there be anything else there at the event?
Not this one. We just decided to go with an afternoon concert and made it early enough in the afternoon that people could get back home before it gets too dark out on the roads. It's just perhaps for our future ones we'll make maybe a reception afterwards.
So, and how long do you think this will last?
It's about an hour long.
An hour?
Yeah.
What a beautiful spot for a little concert like that. And I know the wildlife viewing is amazing out there.
Yes, absolutely.
And so it's, I think it sounds like a wonderful afternoon event. I know the chapel isn't very large, Should people come early if they want to get a seat?
Well, we're actually selling tickets through the Jack, or you can get them at Hearthside Books. So we have 100 tickets on sale, and now this was last Friday. I heard we'd only sold 7, but I understand that's a rather common Juno thing, is last minute. So ticket sales will end Friday, and I'll know how many we have to.
And you'll sell them at the door?
We will. They'll be $5 more per ticket.
And how much are tickets?
It's $20 for adults, $15 for seniors and students, $10 for kids under 12, and then if you're small enough to sit on a lap and stay there, you're free.
Okay. So is it a bit chilly out there? Should people dress warmly?
We'll have the heat on. It was quite chilly yesterday morning when the ladies were practicing, but the heat will be on, and since we'll have mass earlier in the day, hopefully the body heat will help raise the temperature as well.
Okay, great. So I've been talking to Deidre Darr. She's been telling us about the 75th anniversary celebration for the Shrine of St. Teresa, and that's this Saturday at 3 o'clock. And some wonderful music lined up for it, and a great fundraising thing to do for the Shrine. And thank you so much for coming in, Deidre.
Thanks very much for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 29th of October, 2013. It's the birthday of James Boswell, born Edinburgh, 1740. Family insisted that he go to law school. His father was a judge, so he did. He passed the bar exams, but didn't care for the practice of law, didn't really care for Scotland, wanted to be in London, wanted to meet the rich and the famous. So he did. He met Voltaire and Rousseau, Oliver Goldsmith, and then he met Samuel Johnson. He was just 22 years old, and Samuel Johnson, the great man of letters, was Boswell's idol. Johnson was 53. They soon became friends, and over the next 20 years, Boswell followed Johnson around, always took notes, wrote down what he had to say. And in 1791, he came out with The Life of Samuel Johnson. There'd never been a biography quite like it before. It was full of personal anecdotes and vivid descriptions. It was fun to read, and he made Samuel Johnson sound like a real person. Still considered one of the great biographies, and it's one reason why Samuel Johnson, Dr. Johnson, is still so famous today. It's the birthday of the poet and novelist Valerie Worth, born Philadelphia, 1933, best known for her so-called small poems, poems for children about everyday objects, such as her poem Safety Pin, closed, it sleeps on its side quietly, the silver image of some small fish, opened, it snaps its tail out like a thin shrimp and looks at the sharp point with a surprised eye. And it's the birthday of the novelist Henry Green, born Tewkesbury, England, 1905, best remembered for his novel Loving, published in 1945, an upstairs-downstairs story, country home, Ireland, stories of the people who live there and the servants who work there. Henry Green, who said prose should be a long intimacy between strangers with no direct appeal to what both may have known. It should slowly appeal to feelings unexpressed. It should, in the end, draw tears out of the stone. And it's the birthday of the quilt maker Harriet Powers, born into slavery outside Athens, Georgia, 1837, famous for the quilts that she made, which told a story sort of like a graphic novel, such as her Bible quilt of 1886, which now hangs in the Smithsonian, and her pictorial quilt of 1888, displayed in the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. Here's a poem for today by Stephen Dunn, For Fathers of Girls, for Suzanne. When sperm leaves us and we cock-a-doodle-doo and our wives rise like morning, the children we start are insignificant as bullets that get lodged, say, in a field somewhere in the Midwest. If we are thinking, then, it is probably of sleep or the potency of rest, or the one-hand catch we made long ago at the peak of our lives. Later, though, in a dream, we may imagine something in the womb of our heads, neither boy nor girl, nothing quite so simple. But when we wake, our wives are breathing like the wounded on the whitest street in the world. We are there, we are wearing conspicuous masks for the first time. Our eyes show the sweat from our palms. Suddenly, we are fathers of girls, purpley, covered with slime we could kiss. There's a cry, and the burden of living up to ourselves is upon us again. For Fathers of Girls, a poem by Stephen Dunn from his new and selected poems published by Norton and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Joy Biles with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
And you are tuned to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. And I have with me Hillary Young. She's from Juno Youth Services. Hi, Hillary.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
And I also have three students in the studio with me, and I'll let them introduce themselves and tell me what grade you're in and what school you go to.
Hi, I'm Timothy Wilson, and I am in 12th grade, and I go to Yokosuka Dakahiti High School.
Hello, my name is Tara Pierce. I go to TM, and I'm a junior this year.
Hi, my name is Ben Scudder. I go to Juno Douglas High School, and I'm also a junior this year.
Thank you so much for coming in and discussing this really important topic. They are all here to discuss Sources of Strength program. And let me start with Hillary. You work for Juno Youth Services. What is your job with them?
I am the behavioral health specialist for Juno Youth Services, and I work in the high schools doing suicide prevention work.
Great. And so what is the Sources of Strength program, and what is its mission?
The Sources of Strength program identifies a cross-section of students from all different social groups, and it trains them, and it tries to promote cultural change. And so it kind of breaks down the unhealthy cultures like bullying or substance abuse or harassment or dropping out, all those types of things. And it builds on strengths. And so it focuses on family support, positive friends, mental health, medical access, spirituality, generosity, healthy activities, and mentors. And it uses those areas to spread messages of hope, help, and strength across the school.
Did you find this program? Are you the one who brought it to the Juno School District?
Yes. We do a different program called Signs of Suicide, and that's more kind of identifying warning signs, and we decided that we wanted something that had more of a student leadership base to it. And so I researched a couple different programs, and we decided that Sources of Strength would be the best program to bring up. So we started it last spring.
Great. And at what schools is it being done at?
It's currently at all three high schools, so Yokosuka, Dakahiti, TM, and JDHS, and then also at DZ.
So what kind of activities do you plan to do this year?
We have a bunch of different activities. I think that might be a good opportunity for some of the students to talk about what they plan to do at each of their schools.
Great. Well, please.
Mainly in Yokosuka, we're talking about doing things with everyone's trusted adults, and we were going to do something what we were told is called a tree of trusted adults, where everyone writes on a leaf or multiple leaves who they trust in the community or in the schools, and it's for everyone to know that if they need help, and they can go to someone who is trusted. And so, yeah.
And Tara, what other activities?
One we had discussed for our school was building a chalkboard for one wall of our school, and we would have a topic theme each week where you could say maybe what your future goal is, a dream you have, or just a positive experience that you've had in your life, and that way people could see all of the happy things that are going on around the other students' lives and just be boosted by that.
And how about you, Ben?
Over at JDHS, there's a couple ideas that I'm kind of excited about. We are thinking about starting an Instagram, and we're actually getting that going right now. And for those of you who don't know what Instagram is, it's a social media sort of website, you know, app you can get for your smartphones and stuff. And a bunch of kids have it. And it's a way that kids can all connect really easily and really quickly, and it'd be a great way for us to spread our message to kids who are our main audience for the program. Also, we are working on having announcements in the morning bulletin. Every morning, you know, our school says the Pledge of Allegiance and says, you know, events that are going on, and maybe we could have, you know, a positive message or, you know, a fact about suicide prevention or, you know, stopping drug use, something like that. Something that just gets kids thinking about all these different things we're working on.
And do you feel like it's – do you see some benefits so far?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's I think that we are going in a really good direction. We have a lot more kids in the JHS Source of Strength, at least. I'm pretty sure the other schools do too, where we just got a bunch of new freshmen join the program, and they're all from different groups, you know, little cliques inside the school, and it's really cool to see so many different types of kids coming out and representing the entire school.
So tell me, one or all of you, how did you become involved in this? Were you chosen?
Yes, we were all nominated by teachers or staff at our schools who thought that we presented leadership qualities and could be leaders within our school to promote this healthy environment that we're trying to create within the school.
And then did you receive training?
Yes, we spent a lot of training on Saturdays mainly, just a couple hours where we talk about what's important, what our goal is for Sources of Strength and ideas that we want to come up with to promote that throughout our schools this year.
And will you keep getting the training? Will that continue?
So the training happens annually, and we bring up someone from Sources of Strength this year. We had the deputy director of Sources of Strength come up and provide training to all of the adult advisors that are participating in the program. So we recruit adults within the school and then within the community to help support the students throughout the school year to complete their activities. And then each school received their own training with the adults and the students that were selected. And so that happens annually.
So about how many students and teachers does this involve in a school?
We, this year, probably have between 75 and 100 students and teachers participating.
And this is a program that's used other places around the country?
Yes, it's used all over the nation.
And I hope with success?
Yeah, it is an evidence-based program, and it has a lot of research behind it.
Great. So, Tim, what do you like most about this program?
We get a free day out of school, obviously. We are fed, which keeps everyone happy. And we have a chance to be creative in what we want to change for the better. We get to socialize, and we play fun games.
How about you, Tara?
I enjoy it just because I love to help people. I'm definitely a people person. And just to have the opportunity to be able to create a healthy environment where everyone feels welcome and connected, that they don't have to worry about being judged or shunned for anything, that they can always come and get help, is really a cool thing.
And Ben?
I really like the chance to work with the younger kids in the group, too, and get, you know, especially the freshmen. We have a lot of new freshmen, and getting them involved in being leaders in the school and trying to start changing things even now in their first year of high school that they can work on throughout all 4 years. I think that's a really cool opportunity I wish I'd had as a freshman.
Yeah, it sounds like a wonderful model. I remember back when I went to school, I don't think there was any interaction from, you know, between older students and younger students. I was just, everybody was in their own little class. and didn't really, you just, that's what you were supposed to do.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that Sources of Strength really tries to do, is kind of break down all of those kind of social barriers and groups and really just make everyone feel connected and accepted and like they have a place where they belong.
So in the end of the year, how will you know if this is working?
I think that we'll be able to see change. I think the peer leaders that we have identified at the school will be able to tell if there's kind of a different environment in the school, and since they're there every day and they know the most. And then I think that we'll be able to see change by as we continue to grow, you know, to see if more kids want to be involved in the program. And then I think some of the activities, you know, like if we do like a trusted adult display, you know, if we have our Sources of Strength kids doing it and they name, let's say, 10, 15 adults, you know, and then we have the school doing it and they can name even more adults, I think that that'll just be kind of more of a visual representation to see a change.
So this is a suicide prevention program, but I assume that there's other benefits, encouraging healthy behaviors?
It is. It started as a suicide prevention program, and the way that we're implementing it here in Juneau is just more comprehensively. We're partnering with AWARE, and we've also talked with NCAD just to...
What is NCAD?
National Council on Alcohol and Drug Addiction. And so we're just trying to talk community-wide to see how we can really make an impact across the community.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming in. I have with me Hillary Young from Juneau Youth Services, Tim Wilson, Tara Pierce, and Ben Scudder, and they are all students here in Juneau talking about Sources of Strength program, and I have to congratulate you. It sounds like quite an honor to be chosen to be, you know, just for the attributes that you display, to be chosen for this, and congratulations. And thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
This is Bird Note. Does your household sometimes sound like this in the morning? Is that first hour occasionally a bit disorienting as you and yours get ready for the day ahead? Well, if you lived farther south, say along the forest edge in tropical Central America, every morning might begin with this cacophony. The rhythmic guffaws you hear belong to a flock of chachalaca. Look, there they are. A dozen large brown birds resembling small turkeys with long tails, hopping from branch to branch in the trees. Several chachalaca species reside in the tropics. They all sound very much alike, as if they were yelling out their name. You'd probably also hear the whistled notes of a great kiskadee. There. Just outside your window perches a stocky, robin-sized flycatcher with a bright yellow breast, coppery-brown back, and bold black-and-white lateral stripes on its face. The kiskadee, too, seems preoccupied with repeating its name. A suggestion? Some cool gray fall morning, when it's hard to get going, let your thoughts drift south for a rousing, tropical wake-up call. You can share these amazing sounds with a friend. Send them the show from our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Thanks to all the guests today for coming in. And to listen to any of today's interviews or any of the other Juno Afternoon programs, visit the KTOO.org website under Local Programs and Juno Afternoon. Please join us tomorrow at 3 p.m. for Juno Afternoon. Our host will be Ann Fuller. We'll talk with Theater in the Rough's Erin Elmore about their new production, The Ladies of the Camellias. Deborah Hart will fill us in on the details about next week's Southeast Alaska Watershed Symposium. We'll get a preview of this week's Wildlife Wednesday presentation about bats. And Jeff Raclow will give us an update on snow-related activities. That, Writer's Almanac, Music, and More tomorrow at 3 on KTOO-FM. The weather tonight is numerous rain showers in the evening, then rain late. Lows around 40. Tomorrow, rain, highs around 45. Wednesday night, rain showers, lows around 41. Thursday, rain showers. Thursday night, rain showers. Friday, rain showers. And Saturday night, cloudy, chance of rain showers. Saturday through Sunday, mostly cloudy, highs around 41, lows around 35. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.
To apologize to you that the website has not worked as well as it should.
The head of the office that runs Medicare and Medicaid testifies before Congress about the rollout of healthcare.gov.
It's Tuesday, October 29th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Today's hearing was about the Obamacare website, but many Republicans asked about people who find they can't keep their old health insurance.
Also, how the Chinese have handled a fatal car crash in the middle of Beijing.
Officials got to the scene very quickly, and they cleaned it up within 1 hour. You couldn't tell anything had happened after an hour there.
And meet 59-year-old Michael Erb, wedding DJ, web designer, and highly ranked product reviewer on Amazon.
There are some days where I start reviewing products as soon as I'm up in the morning. I will review products all day long.
Now, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. First, it was problems with the website providing details about the Obama administration's new health care law, the Affordable Care Act. Now it's concerns about some cancellation notices people who buy their own health insurance are getting in the mail. On Capitol Hill today, Medicare and Medicaid Chief Marilyn Tavner publicly apologized for what she admits has been a slow and problematic rollout of the new law.
I want to assure you that healthcare.gov can and will be fixed, and we are working around the clock to deliver the shopping experience that you deserve.
An estimated 14 million individuals and businesses who purchase their own insurance are getting the cancellation notices, while millions have tried to sign up on the government's website that allows consumers to compare plans. The site has been plagued by glitches. The White House will not confirm reports the Obama administration plans to stop spying on its allies.